companions. We help you discover your many layers. You feel your car, you wake up with fresh eyes. Question life, question humanity, question society, but most of all, question yourself.
Hello, Ross. Welcome on the podcast, Onion Store. I'm so excited to have you. I think this is probably my first interviewing from Philippines and working on the ground with farmers. So really excited to hear about your story. Could you start us off with a little introduction of yourself?
Okay, I'm from the Philippines. I'm Ross Salvarita. I'm a multidisciplinary artist and really focusing on community engagement, especially in rural communities.
So what is your background and story? The place that you're working with the local farmers, is that where you grew up?
Not really, but it's my home. It's the hometown of my mother. So we moved there during the pandemic and then eventually started a project with the women farm folks, most especially the women farm workers.
How did you start working with the women farmers? Was there a specific reason for it? What is the context of the place?
Well, one thing is we were thinking of creating a space for women to get together, especially during the pandemic. And we felt that by having art workshops and projects with them, they can have a space where they can be together, laugh together, share stories together, and also at the same time be part of a collective where they feel safe and supported as well.
So tell me more about this project that you are working with them.
Yeah, so our project, it started back in December 2020. It was part of a grant by C Junction, which is based in Bangkok. And we started, basically the intention of that was to create a creative recovery program for women during the pandemic. And so we thought art is really the channel that can engage the group. And so we started with a 4-day workshop with them, and then it eventually led to a first art exhibit in the local village, where we invited the tourism group, the vice mayor, like the whole community, and it was something that they're very proud of because it brought visibility, appreciation of the work that they do, and also they felt bold about the fact that they are now creative individuals, not just farm workers.
What did they create in the process?
In the process, they created bags because they went back to their traditional creativity, which is sewing. So they created bags with statements of kindness, and they were like a collection of tote bags that the advocacy is really to remind everyone during the pandemic to be kind, to stay kind, and that kindness matters in this time of the pandemic. So it became a successful fundraising for them, and also they started painting as well their life story on canvas, which was something that they never really thought about, but it's a good way to reflect about their lives being farm workers, but at the same time seeing that, you know, right in front of them is their life story in a painting.
How did the climate angle come into this project?
Yeah. So when I received the ITAC Impact Climate Grant, I then worked with them specifically because, again, I'm seeing the connection with gender, with the women being nurturer and carer of their family. And they're very close to the ground. They work on the ground. They do their planting and everything. So it's something that they can reflect back, and also the experience with the climate changing for the past so many years that they've been working the farm. And then after that, I collaborated with the local artisans and then the students, and then eventually it led to me connecting to the local government as well.
And what was that process of connecting with your local government like? You know, in many people's experiences, I believe many listeners can relate, it's bloody difficult to talk to government.
Yeah, for sure. For us, you know, it was somehow being granted an hour to talk to our municipal legislative council was really a welcoming a welcoming sense of hopefulness for us to voice out our concern. One thing really was that we presented to them our projects, which basically impressed them.
What was the project again?
The ITAC project.
Yeah.
And also,
so what did you do in the project, in the process with the participants?
We conducted a public art installation in the municipality, and it brought people to go and be curious about it. Almost about 9,000 viewers.
What was the installation? Like, was it sculptures?
It's a collaborative work, basically showing the terracotta masks on an inverted triangle, which also represent, you know, system change. You know, we have to invert the system. And also some of the collaborations that happened with the students and the women were also shown as part of the exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the first time that the municipality had that exhibition, which brought curiosity. So when we talked with the council, they understood the intention why we're there, and at the same time, the beauty about it was that they can now see the link between arts and culture and the environment, and that's really basically what we are heading on, so that the three of these things can be fused together, and that policy can be influenced and change can happen. Especially through the policymakers.
This is really powerful. I'm going to bring you back a little bit,
okay,
so that we can unpack this process,
mm-hmm,
of working with your local community, because I think this art process is also quite unique and important to know about. So what was that journey that you took on with the community? You know, what was your working process like? Did you get to know the local community first, had the conversations with them, and then you understood, like, you know, what the kind of farming situation is like? You farm,
yeah,
yourself,
mm-hmm,
and then you understood that there were these frequent typhoons,
yeah,
that were hitting this area,
mm-hmm,
so it was a very real climate,
yes,
problem for the local community,
mm-hmm,
and then how did you involve them in the art,
yeah,
and how did all these come together? You know, was it a co-creative, you know, participatory journey,
mm-hmm,
where they told you, oh, like, I'm really interested in making sculptures, for example, you know,
mm-hmm,
what was that process like?
Yeah, well, the process was, for me, again, to create trust in terms of relationships.
Mm.
So in a way, I cultivated the ground where this exchange can happen authentically, organically as well. I have to also tune in with their knowledge, not imposing what I know about the climate issue. So the beauty about it was that they're open to share their stories, and the way it unfolded is so natural that I learned so much from their experience, because it's really rooted to traditional and cultural knowledge. And these are basically, you know, documentations that's very important, because these are stories that can also be a ground for environmental education. So what the project's intention is that when we would create later on the curriculum, it will be based in the local experience, so that it's relatable. And so the women were, you know, when they started doing the creative workshop, they felt that they're enjoying it, and that's, I feel, the beauty about it, because they have a sense of appreciation now of their own skills, not just farm workers, but now as artists. And so it was really the key to, you know, put this project in place when they're ready to also blossom from that creativity. And that's when the ITAC climate project happened. So in a way, so naturally, that it kind of combined everyone in the community, especially the resources of creative materials, and even the stories of following farm workers, documenting about their lives and, you know, the cycle of their own lives being farmers close to nature.
Could you share an example of a story that was in part of, like, the exhibition?
Mm-hmm. Well, one story that for me is very significant is when I've been following this farmer for two rice planting cycle. His name is Ricardo Lindres. He's 63 years old. He's been farming for almost 50 years. And so when the typhoon happened last 2021, when our project was about to be launched, we had to postpone it. But I thought of him because I've been following his life in a way, with a short documentary film, and he told me that he cannot sleep that night during the typhoon, and he just wanted to wake up and check.
Mm-hmm.
And when he did, he saw the devastation and he fell
mm-hmm.
into tears. And I felt, I feel his emotion. You know, the laborious job for so many months of preparing the land and everything, and then seeing this devastation. And so he advocates this campaign for system change. And then also he understands now that the Philippines, you know, like his little portion of land, he's not really producing so much carbon, but it
mm-hmm.
you know comes from countries that are producing a lot of greenhouse emissions. But he's now understanding that his voice is very important to be heard in the global landscape of environmental campaign.
As you're sharing this story, I can see that you're teary-eyed, and I'm also feeling
yeah.
like the tears coming out because I can sense your
yeah,
emotions
yeah.
through like his emotions that
mm-hmm.
you sense, and I think. Like for us city dwellers
mm-hmm.
who have never like really farmed or been in that sort of like nature cycle,
yeah.
it's so easy to be detached because
mm-hmm.
you are very much protected, you know, in a city setting, especially if you're in a big city.
Sure.
There is investment, there's infrastructure, anything happens like flooding, it's the city council will work on it,
mm-hmm.
you know, you will be supported, etc. But it's very real for people
yeah.
underground, and
yes.
when you have that connection with the ecosystem and nature,
mm-hmm.
it's a sort of relational attachment that's almost like attachment to any other human being.
Mm, for sure.
And that's something that you felt very, very strongly
yes.
with your community.
Yeah, which reminded me of the statement that environmental problem is emotional
mm.
because we invest so much emotion also with the work that
mm.
we do. Mm. And then environmental solution is technical and environmental decision is political. And that's
mm.
where we are now in our campaign to influence policy, especially
yeah.
The local climate change adaptation plan, so that climate education will be part of the curricula in our school systems, at least in our municipality.
You know, what I really love about your project is that it's not just about creating awareness of a problem, it directly links to the action that needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think a lot of the art that has been going on has been about awareness, advocacy, and like talking about issues, and there's a lot of anger often,
mm-hmm.
you know, in advocacy art,
yes.
which I think anger helps,
mm-hmm.
but anger can be destructive as
mm-hmm.
well if it doesn't translate into actions. And we are past the stage of talking the talk, you know, we don't have time left, we're past that stage. It's either you start acting now or we are pretty much screwed.
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sorry, but like the
yeah.
harsh fact is that, and it's not empowering to
yeah.
just keep talking, because
yeah.
we've had lots of conversations. What happened with UN? And, you know, we've been talking for years,
mm-hmm.
decades, actually.
That's true.
What has come out of it? And we might have the technological solutions, but
mm-hmm.
technology is not everything.
Yeah.
A lot of it is linked to behavioral change
yeah.
and policy shifts. It's
mm-hmm.
also really important. It's an issue that isn't just about touching the mind. It's
mm-hmm.
about touching the heart.
Yeah.
And what you're doing is addressing it on so many levels.
Mm-hmm.
I want to bring us deeper into the connection and link between, okay, there is the climate problem, the problem to the like local people, the livelihoods, what they're actually experiencing on the ground, and then how did they come to the process and conclusion that, right, I want to bring this to the municipality, I want to bring this to policy change, the policy writers. How did that process happen, and did they understand systems change, this concept, from the beginning, or was there a process that you had to facilitate, and what did they understand by systems change?
Yeah, yeah. When we all started with the project, I took it really slow and steady for them to fully understand that policy is part of our way of
mm-hmm.
living as
mm-hmm.
as people, as because we are still under the constitution, which also advocates for healthy environment, balanced ecology. So these things has got to be in place for them to understand that it's not just about living right here, right now, but it's about bringing this, bringing our rights
mm-hmm.
forward, because they have grandchildren. So it's really connecting to their way of living, until eventually a sense of realization that we need to influence our municipal legislative council because they are supposed to be the voice of
your community.
Community, yeah. So without the voice of the community, without them trying to be visible, they will never be part of the system. So the important part of this stage where we are is for them to appreciate and also be there right in the room, for them to see how things are being discussed, how policymakers talk, and that they don't feel invalidated with their voices and even their presence. So that's our process in a way, without having to force them to do these things, but you know, just being happily ready to go and, you know, present at the council. And for me, that was the key, because it was voluntary and they just happened to feel good of themselves and prepare themselves to be there. So it's like in the first stage of the system change unfolding in terms of their own understanding and then their own experience as well.
What does your community want from the council?
It's a good question, because when we were there, the invitation was really for us to present the project and the things that we've done so far. And the vice mayor was very welcoming to the idea that for us to present this work, because they are in the stage of budget allocation.
Right,
and okay. The invitation for the committees in the council to perhaps, you know, find something from our presentation that they can adopt or they can propose, so they can utilize also the budget for something that is meaningful and something that will be helpful in their, not just in our community, but in the communities around the municipality as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we're glad that the response was very positive. They were very impressed as well, and that they're eager to receive proposals from the group. So and it's something that they want to replicate also in different different municipalities and different villages, the way the women has created this space for them. And that part of the project now is really to train the trainers, and this will be the women themselves. They will become the facilitators for when this thing happens for other communities.
What next, though? Because the typhoons will continue hitting,
mm-hmm.
whether or not humans
yeah,
like it.
For sure.
What does the community need to better prepare themselves for this, and also for resilience?
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that we've been talking about is adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
Adaptation in the local level, where you know, one thing is really to prepare for disasters, not to wait for it. So
yeah.
Part of our project now is really creating a disaster risk reduction management, sort of like micro level, so that our group will be well equipped to respond to certain disasters that will arrive. So in a way, we know that this will continue to happen, but when we can prepare, it's better. On the other hand, it will be anchored towards environmental reforestation in our communities, just really very micro level at this point, because it's something that we can manage, and it's important that we can manage, you know, certain activities
yeah.
so
yeah.
that it's not overwhelming to all of us.
Do you think it would help at one point to have a scientist researcher who understands like the ecosystem and ecology to come in to do like be part of the process of one of the projects?
Yes, definitely.
Right.
Yeah, I've been talking with
with
someone today
mm-hmm.
about research
yeah.
because I see the importance of it. On the other hand, it's really to archive and document this process, because if it's something that can be helpful in other communities,
yeah.
then that's really the gift of this
yeah.
particular
yeah.
endeavor.
I can really see how this can scale in so many different places, starting from Philippines, other regions, which has a similar sort of ecosystem,
but
also different parts of the world. And actually, this is something that I guess is getting kind of like trendy, but it's still finding its way, which is like residencies that brings together researchers on like water issues and then artists as well. It's not an easy space for artists because it means that you have to understand the science or put in the effort to understand it, which can be very wordy and scientific, which is, you know, like for artists who are used to like creativity and like freedom and open spaces, it might not be the like most favorable thing to read through lots of text. But it's an important place that we can play in, because it's, I think the beauty of the arts that we lack in society is the ability to tap on people's emotions and empathy. And we live in a very logical, rational world. Technology doesn't help. Like coding, life is not all about coding and like IT and social media. You know, it's also about like the soft side of things and the heart. And how do we translate this hard facts and knowledge and science, which nobody understands, into something that touches people, moves them, to actually create some sort of action and behavioral change? And climate change is an issue that is global, and it's an issue that, you like it or not, you will experience it. And it requires everyone to feel a sense of shared responsibility and also autonomy, to know that you are empowered and you can actually make a difference in whichever work that you are, role that you play in society, what work that you do. There is always an opportunity to get involved. It's just whether or not you put your heart and mind into doing something. And I think this is like the key where the arts could really switch on. My other question is that, do you think the community was more open and receptive to you because you were an artist, curious, and wanting to do something with them?
Yeah, I think so. My image is so different, you know, from them. So the curiosity was there. Also, I wasn't very pushy about my agenda. I was more, in a way, welcoming a space where I can be part of it, you know. I see myself as, again, as an activator, facilitator, educator. I see myself as someone that's holding their hand at the moment, because somehow we have to be that that person to hold the hands of those that are in need to cross the street. But once they cross the street and I feel that they're ready to also co-create their own level of urgency to make a difference in their own, you know, space, in their own timing as well, I feel that I'll be there to support the women. And I, you know, sometimes they think, oh, we're old and this, but I told them, you know, it's not like about the age, it's about, again, the level of loving kindness, compassion that you can provide while you're still able to do that. And it's always a reminder for them that you are grandmothers, you have grandkids, and these are, you know, the next generation. So we cannot just sit around and do nothing, because you can make a difference. And I'm sure they felt that. I've seen the transformation in this group of women, and I want to see more and more women as well being transformed by them, and also young students, student leaders, teachers, and also especially policymakers, in a way, because we want policymakers that can really be empathetic, compassionate, and passionate in the work that they do.
Thank you for this, Raz, because I think you pointed out something that is really important and valuable. So I work across spaces, and in the social innovation space, there are also practitioners working bottom-up with communities, but a lot of them realize that it's difficult, you know, when your mandate is to go and work with a issue community, I'm like, you know, like hyphen, like inverted commas quote, then people are going to be skeptical. They don't really want you there. And they're like, oh, what are you trying to do with us? You know, because they don't want to, you know, feel like they are utilized or whatever, instrumentalized. And this is the why it's actually really useful to have an artist come in, because, you know, the art is a soft way of inviting people into a space. And it's like what you said, you know, you weren't being pushy. It was there to build a relationship and to build trust, and it was based on curiosity. There was no like agenda that you were trying to get something out of someone. And this is an important role to play in society and for a lot of the community activation that we need in social innovation. So this is something that I'm advocating for. If you're listening to this podcast and you are not an artist and you're like a researcher or like public sector, get in touch with us. You know, we have people who understand the work, and socially engaged arts, it's not just about like creating a painting and like, this is all about me. It's all of these soft skills, which is not easy for one person to have all of these skills. But you know, socially engaged artists are actually doing this, so this is an important point. This question I asked to everyone in on the podcast as a final sort of question, which is that if someone can do something to create a change in this world, what would it be? It's a big question, I know.
What would it be? Well, one thing, I feel that, you know, again, I go back to the experience. I feel like experience becomes the teaching tool. So when one person can be fully open to the experience of, again, being that source for good that you can multiply to others, I feel that it will just grow with you. You know, it will just grow with the person, because it will always expand. Love expand, the goodness expand, everything will expand. It will never really know any age or anything, because a 5-year-old can make a difference, and also a 90-year-old can do the same. So I feel that just be open to the experience for something good, because at the end of the day, it will multiply the goodness, which is what we want to see every day.
Thank you, Russ. This is the first podcast episode that I'm recording in person, and I feel your energy, and I feel very touched, and there are so many points in this conversation that you have tears in your eyes, and I feel like my tears are coming out too, and I feel the love and the generosity in your heart for your community and the work that you do, and thank you for doing this work.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for this time as well.
Hello Onions Talk listeners, thank you so much for listening. If you liked what you heard, it would really help if you can leave a review on iTunes or like us on Facebook. Otherwise, subscribe and share it with people whom you think will enjoy this. Special thanks to Andrea for the music. Catch you next episode.